Hi, folks, and welcome to another episode of Creative Conversations. And today with me, all the way from New York, is Nadia Nordhaus. And Nadia is a trumpeter. And she was dobbed in by her mate, Karine Pogosyan, who was on the show a little while ago. So here she is. And I'm looking forward to getting to know a little bit more about her and what creativity is for her. So we know so far that you're a trumpeter. Hello, yeah. Nadia. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Wonderful to meet you. And as I've mentioned many times on this show, I love that we can connect across the internet when it works from the other side of the world, which is wonderful. But you're an Aussie in New York. So
Yes. Yeah, I've been here 15 years now, which is sort of wasn't exactly the original plan, but I think the plan was really to have no plan. So maybe it's all.
That's all working.
It all worked out in the wash, yeah.
Best sort of plan, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
That's good. So you can actually understand me, unlike most of the people I speak to.
Oh, really? People have some trouble?
Oh, not really. Apparently we speak fast or something. I don't know.
We have all these sort of sayings that sometimes doesn't quite translate and people get a little bit confused. Or we'll use different words for things, but
Keeps them entertained. It's fine.
It does. Usually like they try and guess where you're from. That usually, takes a few minutes, like England.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I get asked a lot, like, are you from England?
And then they have a crack at the accent.
South of England is usually what I say.
Very south of England. That's it. Just south. Now you've brought a drink along, and I do ask what you've bought and why.
Yes, right. Well, this is I bought a soy latte, an iced soy latte, which is a little bit embarrassing. I wish it was a flat white. but in my neighbourhood, there actually are a few good coffee shops, but none make a flat white like they do at home. So I just have this. It's summer over here at the moment, hence the ice, and I'm not drinking dairy at the moment, so
the main thing is there's coffee in there.
There is coffee, yeah.
The essential ingredient of life.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Pretty sure that's indeed. How life happened.
Yes.
Coffee fell in a pond, and that's my theory.
Yes, it's the elixir of life.
It is. I did read somewhere on a bio that you are a coffee snob, so you're one of mine.
I do love my coffee. Yeah, I always feel like Australians are relaxed about most things, but if you mess with our coffee.
This is true, actually. And I'm a Melbourne boy, and I think we like to think we have a pretty strong coffee culture.
Oh, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And I always tell people how good the coffee is, and people are like, really? Like in Australia, I'm like, have you seen us talk about coffee? About the coffee in America, we have our opinions on that. That's for sure. We don't hold back.
I'm sure we don't.
Wow.
I've not been there, but my kids have, and they've certainly, mm-hmm. are hanging to get home for a coffee. And they give me a hard time, Nadia, because I am a total coffee snob. I have been known to not drink a coffee if it mm-hmm. isn't just right. That's just pathetic, yeah. isn't Fantastic. It? But there you go. I get all emotional about it.
Right. Shop a bad coffee. It's really.
It is.
I've done that too. I bought one, and so I can't do it. I just throw it out.
It ruins my day. I get all cranky.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Me too. It can really, put you in a funk.
It does. Ah, dear. Look at that. Precious musicians. What are you?
Yeah. Mm. Yes. These are the important things in life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us. I'm going to delve a little bit into creativity and what it is for you. As I mentioned to you offline, I'm very curious about the creative process and how different people go about it, what led them to it and why they stick at it. So when did you first know you were creative?
I always just thought of it in terms of music. So I never sort of thought about the word creative. I think I just thought, I guess I was always told, oh, you're really musical, from a young age, because I started when I was really young. So people always go, oh, that's what she does. She's a musician, So I guess forever.
Born with a trumpet in your hands.
I think that's my mum's, you know, my mum's doing, you know, she always, you know, definitely encouraged me. Like we had a piano at home and I would always just like play on it. And then I got lessons when I was really young. So she sort of saw what I really liked and encouraged me, you know, so yeah.
Good on your mum. And was, so the piano was your first instrument, not trumpet?
Yeah, that was my first instrument. Yeah. Yeah. So I played classical piano growing up until about the age of 14 or so. And then I like to say the piano and I had a big fight. And we didn't talk to each other for about 7 years. So it was quite intense at the time. It was this big, big blow up, an exam that didn't quite go to plan. So that was that. But I started trumpet when I was in third grade. So my piano teacher's husband played trumpet. So, and we had the choice to learn any band, or what was it? Trumpet, trombone, flute, or clarinet. So
good call.
I just played trumpet. Yeah. And I thought, this is really easy. This is what I can't believe it. I was such a fool at the age of 7 thinking, I played the C scale. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I'm good. I got this.
Awesome. I've had a crack. I think you can get a note out of it. You've done well, I reckon.
Right. It's an absolute beast of an instrument. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah. Sounds like you've done okay with it, which is good.
Well, you know, still trying, but, you know, see what happens.
Are there any other instruments that you can throw into the mix? Is it? Did you go back to piano?
I've always sort of had it. It's sort of my little secret instrument, to be honest. Like, I write at the piano. I don't write at the trumpet. Everything is done at the piano, and then I could just you know, transpose it for trumpet. I don't do gigs on it. I did like some jazz piano classes when I was in college, but yeah, I just memorized things too quickly, so I just found it impossible.
Oh, hello, Nadia.
Are we back?
Yeah, look, I did warn you about that internet thing. It went all funny on me, but we're back.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. So the piano. I enjoy playing it and I write at it, and that's sort of what I use it for in my life. It's my own sort of like little secret getaway, I guess, from the from the trumpet and the world I live in with that one. So.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Well, and I will go into some detail with you on the creative process. So you've already given me a little clue of how you go about some of it.
Mm-hmm.
When did you know that you wanted to pursue it as a career as opposed to just, around?
I mean, I think my story might be a little bit different to... like many other people that you've interviewed with this, in the fact that I didn't know for quite a while. Like, I tried to do everything else but, to be honest. I knew I wanted to do something creative, like in the arts, and something to do with music, but I didn't want to be a musician as such because I thought there's no security, you know, what's the point? So I actually went to school for sound engineering. So I did a degree in that. But I had a really hard time finding work, to be honest.
Oh, the irony.
And I had this, yeah, I know. I'm like, wow, I thought this was going to like open up all the doors. I mean, I really enjoyed doing it. Like I really loved it. And I did everything I could. I volunteered at a studio. I applied for lots of jobs. I sort of went sort of above and beyond and did all the things that I, you know, thought would get me ahead, but I couldn't do it, and I ended up in this terrible job. For 18 months I distributed radio commercials like by myself, like it was like the night shift, and so I was just there just listening to radio commercials all night.
Fun.
It was terrible. Yes. But I ended up getting fired from that job, funnily enough, because they didn't think that a woman could run the studio.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
We might touch back on that in a moment or two.
Getting interesting. So I went to see a friend. I'm like, what am I going to do? And she said, why don't you move to Melbourne and study improv? And I'm like, it's a great idea. I'll move in a month. And so that's how I got into it. So it wasn't as if I had this sort of, you know, burning desire my entire life to be a musician. It was just sort of, it was always my fallback, really, I guess. So, and I've quit several times since, like, because I studied in Melbourne. I did the improv degree at VCA, and then came to New York and did my master's. And I quit after that for a bit because it was just so intense. And so I worked at the school in the distance learning department, but I didn't really play. I was like, you know, I just feel like I just needed a breather now and then. So at certain periods I'll teach more and then I'll play less. But at the moment, I feel like things are in a really lovely balance. So it's sort of taken a while and it's a little bit convoluted. But I think now is a sort of lovely time where everything that I've done, like the sound work that I've done, because I've, you know, have been in the studio many times and I've, you know, produced my own albums and other people's albums, and all the information that I learned when I was studying sound influences, you know, the way I go about making a record now. So everything's sort of connected now, but it just took a while to get here. So I'm just like breathing, just go, okay, finally. It took long enough.
Picking up the skills you needed along the way. I'm curious, so if you took a break,
mm-hmm.
It's something I can understand, but mm-hmm. what draws you back?
I feel like it's an unhappiness with, you know, the other things I find less fulfilling. I think that's the simple answer. Or something doesn't happen, or the way that I think it does. Oh, it's a little bit vague, but say for example, I was working full time and I was actually quite happy with that job, but then sort of like this issue came up and I was just like, you know what, I think instead of trying to battle out, how can I put it? I felt like I was trying to fit myself in a place that I didn't belong. So it was easier for me to go back to the place that I always felt like I belong, you know, which is in this musical world.
That's a great answer. It's a good reason. All right. No one gets to do this
mm-hmm.
easily.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that goes for most things in life, really. So mm-hmm. what challenges have you had to overcome
mm-hmm.
to this? Pursue your creativity, your musician, your music.
Right. I mean, I think that the biggest one is just poverty. Just living in absolute poverty and eating a lot of porridge, you know, like stomach glue, I would call it. Like just,
gruel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like especially when I moved here, and I moved here in 2003, like I had some money from some grants that I got, but I sort of went through that pretty quickly. And so for the second year that I was here, I was just living off the money that I could earn at the school. I wasn't allowed to work because of my visa. I wasn't allowed to work outside of school.
Right.
So I was living off like something like $200 a week. And to pay in New York, to pay rent and food and expenses on, you know, $800 and and tax, it was really, really tricky. So I sort of survived, off a lot of porridge. And I had a very lovely friend that would buy me lunch every day, which was very much appreciated. And then I worked as an usher at the school. And so they would have a reception after the performances. So I would just be like stealing bits of the reception food. And that was my dinner most nights. So my food bill was low. It was just like lots of oats and milk and sugar. And just,
well, at least the oats are good for you.
Yes, that's true. That's
well, I'm
true.
Surprised you didn't go the instant noodle.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that was, you know, me maybe like a little earlier on. I think that was sort of high school. high school, maybe early college, you know, but I think I was 26 when I came over, and I feel like I'd outdone the instant noodles a little bit.
Moved on, matured to porridge. Yeah. I love it.
Yes, porridge. So much porridge. So yeah, that's the biggest hurdle that I could think of is just, you know, but at the same time, I feel like that teaches you a way of like living really frugally. And so if you do get, you know, like a little windfall or a grant or something, you know how sort of precious that is, and you can sort of make it work for you for, you know, stretch it out for a longer time. So I think it's handy life skills, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I think that's the biggest challenge was just trying to survive and pay my bills. And I didn't have a credit card, so it's like zero is zero. So, so surviving in a city where, I mean, my entire family is in Australia. So surviving in, you know, New York, especially with no family about and a little bit of money, I'd say that was a little bit challenging, but
I think it's quite a challenge. And I think it speaks to the drive and to do this. And it's why I ask that question, you know, why, what have you had to overcome? I think a lot of people think that you get born with this talent, it just happens and
right.
you go. I mean, I'm yet to meet anyone who's kind of gone that route.
So, right. Yeah, I know. That's amazing. That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. And so you've had to fight for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, I think my personality is quite a stubborn one, I would say. Like, I'm not in a negative way, but yeah, maybe you could just say, okay, there is a drive. And I never really sort of thought about it in those terms. Like, I never really thought, oh, I'm really driven or anything like that. But at the same time, I'm like, this is what I want to do, and I can see the steps that I need to do in order to do it, and that's what I'm doing. So, you know, even if it means a lot of porridge.
Fair enough. I'm going to go back a little bit. You lost a job because you're a woman.
Yeah.
Now that's.
I mean, you would have thought they'd notice when they hire me.
Yeah, you'd think, wouldn't you?
You'd think.
Surely they would have gone, I'm not sure she can handle the flashing lights and buttons.
I know. It was ridiculous. I feel like that was. Yeah.
You come up against that. I mean, there's probably not a woman alive who doesn't come up against it, but
what I noticed, I mean, I feel like when I lived in Australia, that was probably the biggest sort of sexist, stupid thing that had happened to me, but in a way, a blessing. Because it sort of veered me onto the track that I think that I probably should have been doing in the first place. But when I moved here, the only work that I could get as a musician was playing in all female bands. So no one would hire me. So I would do like club date bands, like functions with all female bands. Wow. I was in an all female big band. And the only other times that I would play in a smaller ensemble were women leaders. So, yeah. So it took four years before I was hired, you know, to by a man to play. For me, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know,
and it's ludicrous. Like, and on behalf of poor men everywhere, I'm sorry. Absolutely ridiculous.
I know.
Has that changed? Know. Please tell me that has changed.
No. I mean, well, for me, like, yes. For personally, like, you know, I feel like, in all honesty, I feel like it took that sort of, it almost sort of like validation to be hired by a man, you know, to be taken seriously, because the, you know, the general consensus is, like, if I walk into a room, you know, with a trumpet, it's just like, is she lost? Like, whose trumpet is she holding? Or that sort of thing. Like, there is that, like, oh, you know. So, that has just been, I mean, you just got to roll your eyes because it's just so completely ridiculous. And I feel very lucky that I didn't experience that when I was growing up. Like in my primary school was mainly girls that played, you know, like trumpet and trombone. And in my high school big band, 3 out of the 5 trumpets were women, all female trombone section, you know, 3 out of the 5 saxes, including bass, like including Barry Sax. So to me, it wasn't an issue. So I feel like in a way we're sort of streets ahead of perhaps over here a little bit, where people are like, oh my God, a woman, like freak out.
at least if they start going, you can just drown them out.
Exactly. Oh, exactly.
Like having one of those loud whistles. You can just.
Oh yes.
I think I find it crazy. You've got lungs. Good Lord. All right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's talk about the creative process. You're right. You've already mentioned that you write on piano. Tell me a little bit about the creative process. Do you have a routine that you follow? Are you superstitions? Do you sit on the same chair every time, the same room, face north, east? Any of that sort of stuff? Is there
ring a little bell? I don't have a routine as such, but definitely if I want to be, like if I have a deadline, I feel like if I approach it every day or as often as I can, then that helps enormously. So it's just sort of like turning up and just not, you know, instead of, you know, you can't really sort of like schedule the muse, or you can't sort of schedule creativity to sort of happen. But if you turn up regularly, you know, and just sort of, I feel like it gives more of a chance for that actually to happen. So I guess it really depends on what project that I'm working towards. Like if I'm working towards, say, like releasing an album, then I'll hire a practice space and I'll turn up there. I usually, you know, for these sorts of things, we'll get up really early and then I would turn up, you know, as often as I can around the same time. And then I would find that, you know, after a week or two, then the ideas flow a little easier and you know, and I get more into the routine of it. But that's sort of it in terms of, you know, the way I would sort of approach it, yeah.
What gets you started? Is it...
probably just I mean, I feel like it's always just like that one, like it's like that seed or just that sort of flash or that it's like having like that big idea. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if, and then like, oh, I did a record with these instruments or something like that. Like it's sort of, I was think sort of big picture, and then like, okay, now I've actually got to like write the music and, you know, get the band in the one room together. That's really difficult. Like you can, you know, write for the people, but in order to sort of coordinate everybody's schedules, that's like, you know, that's tricky too.
It definitely is tricky.
Yeah.
Life's busy.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, so having almost wearing those, you've got to wear so many different hats. Like you've got your sort of creative hat, and then you've got your organizational sort of administrative hat, you know, and then your porridge hat.
Survival hat.
Survival, all the things you need to survive while you're doing these other things, you know, so.
It actually explains a lot to me, that whole porridge thing. It probably... See, I don't think I couldn't do porridge. I think that probably explains why I haven't been driven enough. Not prepared to go porridge.
Right. I know. I'm not prepared anymore, but you know, I feel like, yeah.
All right. So you have an idea and you've got to track that down and make that happen. How do you go about capturing your ideas so that you don't lose them?
Well, a couple of different ways. What I've been doing lately, which I feel has been working really well, is just to use my iPhone and just have my, like, the voice memo on the iPhone. and I just put it on the piano and then I just play. And then if there's something I think that is workable in there, then I'll save it. But in fact, one of the tracks that's coming out on a record next year was actually just a transcription, just a straight transcription of a piano improv that I did after I had a little trip to Iceland. I went on vacation and, you know, the landscapes are so incredible. Mm. And so I sort of sat at the piano and I'm imagining, you know, the landscape. In particular, there was this waterfall called Gullfoss, and it's just this epic. It's like this canyon. It's just filled with this massive waterfall, and you can't even see it from the road. Like, you don't think there's anything there. There's just a car park. And then suddenly you walk down the steps and you're like, oh my goodness, this is just incredible. And so I was just picturing that and then was playing. And luckily, yeah, just had my phone with me. So, and then went back later and transcribed it. And like, what am I doing here? I'm like, why did I? It's like, it was a little out of time. Oh, I put an extra, you know, bar of five in there, but just try to sort of stay true to what actually happened. So that's sort of my new process. And before I didn't record, I would just write with the, you know, I'd have the manuscript paper at the piano and I would write something and then just scroll it out and then write something more and scroll it out. But I also like writing away from the piano too, and I'm lucky enough that my ears are pretty good by this point, yeah. By all the work, you know. So I can just scroll down an idea and work on it later. So,
oh, it's a great skill. So you can sit in a coffee shop, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd, you know, prefer to have a coffee and chat, but. If I have to work.
But if the muse pops in, what are you going to do?
The muse strikes. And it does sometimes in places and at times that are really inconvenient. But I've learnt not to ignore that. Like sometimes if you're just before you're falling asleep and it's, you know, it's 4 a.m. and suddenly this idea comes in your head and you're like, really? What now? Like, why couldn't it have been this morning when I was sitting at the piano for 3 hours? Like, why does it have to be now? But then you got to like turn the light on, get up and find some paper and write it out. You know? So I feel like, sort of seizing those opportunities is really important. And whether or not it's convenient is, you know, it doesn't care. So you shouldn't care either. Just sort of do it, you know, when you can.
Yep. Fair enough. I understand that too. So. Well, that's interesting because life is, as I said, busy and full of distractions and, mm-hmm. you know, we have this ridiculous need for sleep.
Yes.
So how do you deal with distractions? I mean, when you, whether it's during the writing process or just simply because you're being drawn or pulled by other things during the day mm-hmm. away from you. Mm-hmm.
I think I have a very short attention span anyway, so I like to try and do things as quickly as possible. So I remember one time when I did this residency upstate in New York. It was amazing. It was at the Omar International Arts Center, and so that was sort of idyllic because you're out in nature, and they had these open air barns with pianos in it, so you can just sort of stroll up and right, it was gorgeous. It was amazing. And that really taught me about sort of showing up every day because by the end of it, I was like, oh, the ideas are flowing so much easier than it did at the beginning. But what I would do is I'd do an exercise where I'd be like, okay, I'm going to write for 5 minutes. And if a tune doesn't come out in 5 minutes, I'm just abandoning ship, do something else. So I got a few usable tunes out of that. But then also I remember talking to a friend and he said, why are you doing that? Like, I played one. I'm like, but it didn't happen in the 5 minutes. He goes, yeah, but you could work on that later. And I'm like, well, okay. I see your point.
kind of like speed dating.
You're right, totally.
Just testing it out and seeing if it appeals, and you can always follow it up later.
Exactly.
Interesting
idea. But I was like, there's not that instant connection, I was like, nah, forget it, you know. But now I'm like, oh, all right, well, maybe I'll give a little bit more time. You know?
So. Rapid creativity.
Yeah.
You're not the first person to have mentioned this, by the way, and that need to do things in short bursts because of
distractions
in life. I mean, that's an interesting idea. Indeed. So, how do you go about coming back to that, though? Okay, you record stuff. Do you regularly go through it, listen to it, and think, oh, there's an idea I need to chase down? Or do you just wait for it to knock on the memory and go, hey, I was
there? Right. Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like, there's some, like, I have some voice memos that I'm like, oh, I haven't checked out these. I haven't listened to them in like 2 years. And I'm like, oh, I think there's something, there might be something in there. And so in my book, I'll sort of sketch out a few notes that will sort of remind me that idea exists. But often they'll sit there for years and I won't do anything with them. And then other times, if I'm working on something, then I'll sort of revisit, you know, the more recent ones more often, you know, and try and sort of develop that. But I feel like I've got a few sketchbooks, and I've also got, you know, quite a number of voice memos with little ideas that, you know, if a commission or something comes up, then I can always go back and see if there's something that will sort of fit the particular context that I have to write for.
I'm curious about, well, I'm curious about a lot of things, to be honest. But I'm curious about the mindset of someone who creates on a regular basis. About perhaps your own expectations of your ability to create. What are you thinking when you, it's a bit of a vague question, I guess, but how do you go into that process? What mindset are you taking in? One that says, I'm open to just letting this happen, or I have to do this, or, you know, what?
Right. Well, for me, it's almost like I'll just go sit at the piano and it's almost like I'm telling myself, okay, I'm ready. it's time for some music. And then I just wait and I just listen and see if I just can hear something, and I just wait. Sometimes I'll just sit there and then I'll wait for something. And if nothing's coming, then maybe I'll play a few things, and then that will lead me to something. Or if I play something, I'll realize that it's an idea that I came up with maybe like a year ago or 2 years ago, and it will come out, and then maybe I'll start developing that. So it sort of depends on the day, and you know, but I feel like, you know, and sometimes nothing, you know, I'll be trying to write and I realize after a few minutes, I'm like, you know what, it's not happening. So I'll just go do something else, just abandon ship and do something else. But then maybe at the end of the session, then I'll come back and something will be there. So, you know, it's just a mess.
Does that worry you when nothing comes? Does it, or is it?
I find it inconvenient. Because I'm like, this wasn't part of my plan. Like, I really needed to write this, you know, today. and there's nothing. But it doesn't worry me as such, because I think as a person, I try not to worry too much about anything. So, you know, I just like to remain sort of naive. It's the secret to happiness is just not to know what's going on. But I don't get worried too much, because I feel like, I don't know, I guess there's this sort of faith that I'll be able to put something together in a hurry if I have to.
Okay.
But hopefully I've left enough time and I've been organized enough to actually do this in a time frame, and that the quality of it is enough for me to put my name on it.
That's kind of where I was going, and I think you just that's what I wanted to hear. You have faith that it's going to turn up.
Yeah.
That's the mindset that you're going in with, I think. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, maybe not on time, but it's going to come.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Might be held up in traffic, but it'll
it's on the way.
Eventually. Yeah.
What inspires you? what to write? You mentioned the waterfall before.
I mean, I feel like my last, like this, I have a record coming out. It's a vinyl only release as part of the, it's on this label called Nouvelle Records. And this is a subscription only series. And so I actually recorded this album live in Switzerland. It was this sort of amazing opportunity. And so when I was putting the material together for this group, I was writing for a new quintet that we'd actually never played together. They're all my really good friends, and we've played together separately in different ensembles, but never as a group. And so, you know, I'd rented this practice space, and I would sit there at the piano, and I would be there thinking of a lot. And I sort of realized that they were all almost about sort of like either about home, like a lot about Australia, or the act of like moving to Australia. I mean, moving to New York from Australia, and a lot of them about like certain landscapes. And so I feel like what inspires me is the sort of the visual. So, mm-hmm. you know, I can sort of, just imagine like a place, and then I'll just wait, and then I'll, you know, play what I can sort of hear. So,
Very good.
Yeah.
Who do you admire as a creative? Not necessarily in music, but are there creatives that you just think, wow, how do they do that?
Right.
I do that all the time. But
Right. I feel like I admire, let's see. I think I admire my friends, actually. Like, because most of my friends, I would say like 99% of my friends are creatives. I like to say we hunt in packs. But they're always really, like the output just seems like it's just relentless, and like they won't just sort of do, some of them won't just do an album and then won't do anything for a couple of years, which is sort of what I like to do sometimes. You know, but they'll always be working on something, you know, and I feel like I'm super lucky to work with these incredible band leaders at the moment. And so I'm inspired by them when I come to rehearsal and they've got this new music and these new ideas and we get to play it and it's amazing, you know. So I play with the Maria Schneider Orchestra, which is gorgeous, absolutely unbelievable music. And I play with the Annette Cohen Tentet, and, you know, Annette Cohen is this incredible clarinetist. And so, yeah, those are the ones that spring to mind. My friend Luke Howard, I don't know if you know, he's based in Melbourne, beautiful piano player. He's always sort of like relentlessly, but beautifully pursuing, you know, this gorgeous music and new ideas and doing all these amazing things and sort of just taking it in his stride. So those are the people that I sort of admire. I'm not sort of thinking, oh, Miles Davis and Freddie Hubbard. I mean, sure, yes, of course, you know, but sort of more relevant to my world.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of, is there a particular piece of your own that you're just like super proud of? One that stands out?
I feel like one of my earlier pieces called Open Road, seems to be, I'll call it a hit. It's a little bit, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek, but I'm like, oh, the hit song, you know. I feel like everyone wanted it played at their weddings, and my friend Luke recorded it on his album, and I recorded it on mine, and I feel like, you know, the feedback that I got from that was really lovely. And so I always think, okay, I've got to write, now I want to write a tune that's sort of better than that one. So I would sort of use that as a benchmark. And I know, I feel like recently, I think this, the tune that I was talking about, like about the waterfall, I feel like, even though it sort of came out in like, you know, 3.5 minutes, and I didn't, with like no edits, in a way it's like, I, you know, how can I sort of take credit for that, really? I just sort of played and that was it. But I'm really quite proud of that one, actually. I feel like that, and And some of the band members, I remember like getting such beautiful feedback. They're like, I just had this feeling like of almost like it was almost like excruciating happiness when I was playing it, you know? And I'm like, I can't ask for anything more. Like that is like the ultimate compliment when like my bandmates' hearts are bursting because of these notes that I wrote at a piano in the middle of nowhere, you know, for 3.5 minutes. So it's sort of, it's an interesting sort of, you know, it's always interesting to see how these little ideas will actually end up and how they will affect other people. It's quite lovely.
Magic. It's great. Mm. That's a good reason to be proud of a piece of music, I think.
Yes.
How it affects people.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about a seven-year-old with a trumpet, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give that seven-year-old or any young, you know, creative about being creative, about pursuing a creative life?
Mm-hmm. I think the advice that I give, like to the youngsters, like I always said, and there's always a few raised eyebrows, but I just always say like, do what you want, like do exactly what you want, and you know, find something that works for you, you know. And I feel like that even because I teach a lot of lessons, and every lesson that I give is completely different. Because, I mean, there's obviously certain similarities, you know, generally playing the same instrument, generally, you know, but it's sort of like what, you know, certain exercises for one person is not going to work for the other person. And I've met some students that sort of approach things in the same way as me. And I'm like, I know that if I give these exercises to you, it's going to like feel like I'm killing your soul. So we're going to absolutely skip all the things that the textbook would tell you to do, and we're just going to do something else. So it's always like, just do find what works for you and then just do that. And it's always like you are your own best teacher. So don't listen. You can take it. You can take some advice, but feel free to ignore it, but do what sort of like your gut or your inner imp, I like to say, what your inner imp tells you to do, because I feel like that's the thing that is going to lead you to where you want to be. Otherwise, you're going to end up, you know, somewhere that's not going to make you happy.
Great advice. I think that's it's not cookie cutter, is it? You've got to go.
No, not at all. Not at all. Which is the beauty of it, you know. We're all so completely different. It's sort of beautiful.
It is. Well, thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed this. And, I'm going to ask you to give some thought, and we'll touch base later on this, about who I could possibly interview, you could introduce me to for future episodes.
Absolutely.
I will also put on the show notes links to your media. You've got nadianordhaus.com, if I'm not mistaken. You'll have some social, I'm sure, Facebook, Instagram, etc. Yeah. So we'll pop those on the show notes so people can to get along and have a look at what you do and hopefully buy some of your music and keep you in coffee, because that's what it's
awesome about. Yes, excellent plan.
Coffee and porridge.
yes, easy on the porridge, but yeah
hard on the coffee, that's it. Fantastic. Thank you very much. Stay on the line. We'll have a chat afterwards. But I want to wish you all the very best for future endeavors. And
thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
For more information, visit Creative Conversations at www.creativeconversations.com.au.